It's time to Fade the Chalk.
Fade the Chalk.
Presented by the FTN Network, helping you win your fantasy leagues and dominate in DFS. And now, here are your hosts, Derek Brown and Adam Pfeiffer.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Fade the Chalk, presented, of course, by the FTN Network. Adam Pfeiffer here. Hopefully, everybody had a great week six. I'll tell you what, it was, halfway through the 1 o'clock games, I was not enjoying anything, right? I mean, there was a lot of sloppy football, some injuries. I mean, we'll talk about it. Jonathan Taylor had two carries in the first half, and I was like, you know what? I'm stepping outside. Going outside, carved some pumpkins, got outside, and I come back in, and a bunch of fantasy points are scored. So maybe that's the move from now on. But here we are on the Monday solo recap edition of Fade the Chalk, again presented by the FTN Network. Appreciate everybody tuning in. We had our first week of bye weeks this week, and it's only going to get worse. We have six more teams on bye here in week number seven. But before we get to week seven, before we look ahead, we got to look behind and look back at what happened in week number six, and that's what we're here to do today. Before we do that, though, I want to tell everybody again, this is talked about ad nauseum, but like, this is the best time of year for sports fans, right? You have NFL football, midseason, playoff baseball, hockey season just started, basketball is about to start. We have a great NBA product with the optimizer, projections, tools, access to the Discord, content from myself, Joe Metz, Stefano, Zach Graham, Kawhi Eisenberg, Fast Eddie Fears rankings. You get those part of the NBA package. I mean, the live shows, the live streams. Also want to shout out another great, great analyst who's going to be providing NBA content. How about David Jones, man? Absolute machine. Had himself a great week on in the NFL in week six. And what does he do? He goes to Twitter and starts, giving things away to the community because he's that dude. So shout out David Jones. Great to see that. And again, just honestly blessed and really happy to be part of FTN. So a lot to look forward to. Again, get signed up, ftnfantasy.com, FTN Daily, FTN Bets, all that great stuff. Let's get to these games. We'll start in London, the game that kicked off about 9:30 Sunday morning across the pond. Jacksonville gets their first win of the season. Their first win in 20 games. They win 23-20 as Miami literally just forgot how to coach in this game. Tua Tagovailoa made his return, had some bad moments, but finished with a good fantasy game. 329 yards, two touchdowns. They really abandoned the run in this game. A week after Myles Gaskin gets, a ton of work in the passing game, and maybe it was, scripted for that reason against Tampa Bay's elite run defense where he has, 10 catches or whatever, two touchdowns, and he comes back down to earth. And I still, even after that game, I didn't see how you can trust Myles Gaskin. But he goes back down to 25 snaps, 5 rushing attempts, and 14 routes. Malcolm Brown plays the same amount of snaps, has 5 rushing attempts and 12 routes. And then Savon Ahmed has 19 snaps, has 7 attempts and 10 routes. So it was a 3-man backfield. Miami has the worst rushing offense in the NFL right now, and I just don't see how you can trust anybody from this backfield. The passing game is interesting, though. Devontae Parker, Will Fuller on IR. Parker was out again. Preston Williams is out. So it was all Mike Gesicki and Jalen Waddle who combined in this game for, 21 or 22 targets. Waddle has 2 touchdowns. He's not being used down the field much. He only had 70 yards on his 10 catches, but when you're getting 10 catches in a full PPR league and you're getting 2 touchdowns, you really don't care. Their targets have been so solidified with one of Parker or Fuller out of the lineup. I don't think Parker's been practicing for like 2 weeks now, and we know Will Fuller's on IR. So, I mean, these two players are going to be pretty trustworthy going forward, I think, especially if Miami continues to struggle running the football. I mean, they just can't run the football right now. Mike Gesicki, who I'll admit I was not on during the offseason. I thought he was a bad pick with Will Fuller there. And of course, Will Fuller and Parker being out impacts that. But he's essentially in the slot like 75% of the time. It's the highest rate among all tight ends. He is not a tight end. He's a slot receiver. And yeah, technically, if you look at the numbers and the positions, The Dolphins operated out of more two tight end sets in this game, but it's really just Gesicki playing in the slot, Waddle moving around the formation, and the passing game, and the targets funneling to these two players as long as Parker and Will Fuller are out. So I think Waddle's a borderline top 30 receiver until Parker and Fuller are back, and Gesicki's a clear top 12 tight end. He's been very good as of late. He has 8 for 115 on 9 targets in this game. For the Jacksonville side, in week number 5, it was really frustrating. First game without DJ Chark, and we see Marvin Jones and Laviska Shenault barely utilized. Much better in this game. They both see 10 targets. They have 20 of the 41 targets. That's a 40-plus percent target share between the two of them. Obviously, it's closer to 50%. Marvin Jones, 7 catches, 100 yards, and a touchdown. And it was an impressive touchdown in the corner of the end zone because those are the only touchdowns that Marvin Jones scores, of the impressive variety, because he's an incredible football player. As good as he is and as much as I love him, he's going to have some up and down weeks. That's been Marvin Jones' MO for his career, right? At least for fantasy. But he's always been Trevor Lawrence's favorite target. And I know LaViska had 10 targets in this game, 6 for 54. I'll tell you what, I had Viska at my flex in a league, and seeing him finish with 6 for 54 after watching that game, I was kind of relieved. He had a couple bad drops. It's just the Jamal Agnew usage is frustrating. 5 for 78 on 6 targets. I mean, in deeper leagues, I think you need to at least look at Jamal Agnew, especially in a week where we have 6 teams on bye. You look at the receivers on bye this week, right? Stephon Diggs, Emmanuel Sanders, Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, Amari Cooper, CeeDee Lamb, Justin Jefferson, Adam Thielen. Like, this is absolutely pointless that I'm bringing this up because Jacksonville's on bye this week too. But the point is, Jamal Agnew is actually a legitimate part of this offense. Same with Dan Arnold. They both have 6 and 5 targets, respectively. I think a lot of teams are going to drop Laviska Shenault this week because he's been underwhelming and the Jags are on a bye. If I can help it, I would still prefer to hold on to Laviska Shenault. Like, the 10 targets is encouraging. And I just think with how good he is as a player, I still think he's a talented player. Like, you get the ball in his hands in space, and he's going to make defenders miss. He's incredibly tough to tackle. So if I can help it, I would still try to hold on to Laviska Shenault. But if you can't with him on a bye, like, I don't think he's a player where it's like I think he's droppable, but I don't think he's a must drop. I think that's the best way to put it. James Robinson. Now, he's in the beginning of the season, we saw Carlos Hyde get enough work to really frustrate anybody watching James Robinson, knowing how good of a player he is, but that hasn't been the case lately. On Sunday, he had 100% of Jacksonville's running back touches. He outsnapped Carlos Hyde 56-7. And now over the last 2 weeks, I mean, he is back to being that in that James Robinson role we saw last year, right? The last 2 weeks, he's out-touched Carlos Hyde. I believe it's like 39-5. The snaps are massively in James Robinson's favor. He's getting targets. He's getting all the goal line work. And per usual, James Robinson looks good. He has, over his last 4 games, he has a touchdown in every game. And I believe he has 5 touchdowns during that span. And he has at least 70 rushing yards in every one of those games. So he's just been awesome. They're not using Carlos Hyde, which is great. So James Robinson, clear, locked in, rock steady, top 12 running back the rest of the season for the Jaguars. Think that covers it from that game. Trevor Lawrence kind of looks better each week, but not somebody you're trusting outside of bye weeks or potential streaming options in fantasy. Indianapolis dominates the Houston Texans 31-3. This game had me super tilted for a while because coming off back-to-back huge games, Jonathan Taylor at home against the Texans, you're expecting massive production. And I noticed watching the game, okay, Naeem Hines gets the first carry of the game, whatever. Maybe it's just a package thing or it's a play design, whatever. And then you watch more of the game and they're going kind of passive in the first half and they're getting big plays down the field to Paris Campbell and T.Y. Hilton, who, by the way, made his return. We'll talk about that. And then all of a sudden you look up and it's halftime and Jonathan Taylor has 2 carries. And it's like, we've seen the Colts underutilize Jonathan Taylor before, but not to that extent. And that's when I stepped outside. I was like, I can't watch this anymore. I'm going outside to spend time with the family, carve some pumpkins for Halloween. And I come back in about 15, 20 minutes later, and Jonathan Taylor has 150 yards and 2 touchdowns. Like, He broke an 83-yard run. He had 145 yards on 14 carries and two scores. Still felt underutilized with 15 touches, but when you're as good of a player as Jonathan Taylor is, maybe you only need 15 touches. So over the last, 3 weeks, he's got over 440 total yards of offense, five total touchdowns, and yet he's not reached 20 touches in any of those games. So Taylor is great. He's a clear must-start RB1 every week, and his schedule is still really good, right? He's got, I think, the Niners next week, and then he's got the Jets, the Jaguars, the Titans. Like, he's got some really good matchups still coming up. So I think Taylor is, obviously great, but I feel like if you can trade Taylor for, a Kamara or another running back that you know is guaranteed to get the ball, I wouldn't hate that. And I know it's tough to trade a player who's been out of this world the last 3 weeks. I just hate watching Marlon Mack and Naeem Hines combine for 12 touches. And it's like they talked about Marlon Mack being on the trade block and potentially showcasing him for a trade. But it's like, when is that going to happen? So Taylor's awesome. Just give him the ball more. Give him 20 touches every game. Why would you not? T.Y. Hilton made his 2021 debut in this game, and because he always does, he has a good game against the Houston Texans. 4 for 80 on 4 targets. That's like, okay, whatever. And then you understand that he only played 24 snaps and ran 16 routes and still had 4 catches for 80 yards. He was kind of splitting time with Paris Campbell, and then Campbell had that 51-yard catch for the touchdown, but then he left this game and didn't return. So we saw Ashton Doolin and T.Y. Hilton kind of split time. They were clearly going to limit T.Y. Hilton. That was their plan. But Hilton needs to be added in every single league. He still got it. Wentz actually played pretty well for the majority of the season outside of maybe one game. And again, that schedule we talked about is favorable for T.Y. Hilton as well, right? Jacksonville, terrible against receivers. Tennessee, dreadful against receivers. San Francisco secondary is not exactly the strong point of their defense. So T.Y. Hilton, must add, he can be trusted as wide receiver 3 potentially as soon as next week. And maybe that hurts Michael Pittman Jr., who continues to look good, but only 3 targets in this game. Again, the Colts only threw the ball 20 times. Their offense actually wasn't even on the field that much. But I think Michael Pittman in Dynasty Leagues is a really interesting buy low if anybody's worried about the return of T.Y. Hilton. Because Pittman, prior to this week where T.Y. Hilton wasn't back and they weren't throwing 20 times, he was among the top 10 players in targets. He was getting a ton of looks. Mo Ali Cox continues to produce on limited targets. I'm not quite ready to go there yet, but he would be interesting if he got a larger full-time role on any offense, including this one. So, and per usual for the Texans, it's Brandon Cooks or bust. 9 for 89 on 13 targets. Good game from him. He has a 30% target share for Cooks. He now has a 30%+ target share in 4 of 6 games this season. He's the guy. He's been really a great value this year. He's only had 1 or 2 bad games. He's a great wide receiver 3, high floor, going to get 8 targets at minimum every single week for the awful and often trailing Houston Texans. Let's go to another awful team, Detroit 11, Cincinnati 34. Staying on Detroit real quick, DeAndre Swift, we've heard Dan Campbell talk about how you're going to see more of DeAndre Swift. He's going to get more work. We're going to see it. And didn't see it last week. And maybe this week it had to do with Jamal Williams not being 100%. Williams got the start, got the first carry. But DeAndre Swift, who kind of dominated the playing time last week, especially the routes, now he has 13 carries to Jamal Williams 4 in this game. He plays 49 snaps to Williams 19, runs 32 pass routes to Williams 10, and has 18 touches to Williams 5. He, again, another 5 catches on 7 targets. He still leads, it's either him or Najee Harris, but leads the NFL among running backs in snaps, in routes, targets, receptions. He's a PPR cheat code. Only had 24 rushing yards on 13 carries, got the goal. He's just getting the touches you want. And that's kind of what I overlooked going into the season. I was a little bit too invested on, DeAndre Swift's not going to get 20 touches a game, and Jamal Williams is going to take, 12 touches a game, and the offense is bad. But, he's getting 5 catches at worst every game. He's getting a couple inside the 5 touches every game. So you're feeling great about DeAndre Swift, even in games like this where the overall numbers weren't great, but he still scores, he still gets the receptions. Nice bounce back game from TJ Hockenson, who had, he's been dealing with the knee, not 100%, but back-to-back down games, he goes for 874 on 11 targets. And then Amon-Ra St. Brown, again, not the production you want, 5 for 26, but he now has at least 7 targets in 3 straight games. No Quintez Cephas, obviously, who's out for the season with a broken collarbone. So Amon-Ra St. Brown, talked about him as a waiver wire pickup last week when everybody was talking about Tony. I just wanted to point out that Amon-Ra needs some attention too. And he's getting a lot of targets lately, so don't sleep on Amon-Ra St. Brown. The Bengals are very interesting here. Joe Burrow has a really good game, 271 yards, 3 touchdowns, also has 20 rushing yards. Had to stream him in a couple spots, and I'm happy it worked out that way. Joe Mixon, questionable entering the week. He was active, 18 carries, 5 receptions, so another 23 touches for Joe Mixon, who on the season is averaging just over 20 touches per game. It's 21 touches per game, but he had the week 5 game where he was limited, right? Last week against Green Bay, he was very limited, so he would have got his normal workload if he wasn't limited. So Mixon's workload's great. It was nice to see the receptions there, although Chris Evans was involved in the passing game, 3 catches for 49 yards and a touchdown. But yeah, Mixon, I mean, this Bengals offense, right? This entire team, really, we kind of missed on. Entering the season, we were very excited about the Bengals throwing the ball 40 times a game with Joe Burrow and these 3 really good receivers. And that just hasn't happened. You know, entering this game against Detroit, the Bengals were dead last in average seconds per play, around 30 seconds. So they play at one of the slowest paces, arguably the slowest pace in the NFL. And then you look after this game, they're now 25th in the NFL in passing rate. So Burrow, only 29 pass attempts in this game. Yes, I know they faced the Lions, but their defense as a whole has played much better than anybody expected this year. So they're playing slow, and a lot of it in the beginning of the season was them kind of taking it easy with Burrow, kind of easing him back in. But they're playing better defense than we expected. They're relying on the run and giving Mixon 25 touches a game. And as a result, T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd are having a lot of underwhelming games, right? Higgins, 3 for 44 on 6 targets. Boyd has 1 catch for 7 yards on 3 targets. And Tyler Boyd, I think, is the player that I am worried about here. He was good in the games where Higgins was out. But you look at it now, Tyler Boyd is averaging 3.7 receptions per game with T. Higgins active, which is with all 3 receivers active because Jamar Chase hasn't missed a game this year. So 3.7 receptions per game, just over 5 targets per game, and 34 receiving yards per game. I mean, Tyler Boyd, we usually view as like a really high floor receiver. And yeah, that would have been the case in the 2 games Higgins has been out. But again, if they're playing slow and not throwing the ball 40 times a game, it's really going to hurt Tyler Boyd because Jamar Chase is getting all the downfield work, right? He's had at least 130-plus yard reception in every game this season. He leads the NFL in receptions with 14. Or sorry, targets with 14. These are all on deep passes. So 20 plus yards down the field. Jamar Chase, 14 targets, leads the NFL. 8 receptions, leads the NFL. 4 touchdowns, leads the NFL. I mean, he's literally been the best deep receiver in the NFL this year. And if you want to just look at it, I don't know if there's been 10 or 12 receivers overall better than Jamar Chase through 6 weeks of play. He's been awesome. So he's getting the deep targets and he's getting more targets than Tyler Boyd in general. Higgins is getting the end zone targets, so at least Boyd with occasional underneath targets. Like, that's just not a high ceiling play in fantasy right now with the Bengals throwing the ball as little as they are. So I'm worried about Boyd. I'm slightly worried about Higgins, but not as much as Boyd. And then Jamar Chase is a rock star. He's been, I mean, breaking news, one of the top receiver prospects in years is actually good at football after all. Who would have thought? He's starting Jamar Chase every week. Higgins is a flex or a wide receiver 3, whereas he was looking at like a wide receiver 2 status entering the season. And right now, I don't know if I would drop Boyd, but I would not start him right now. It's there's no ceiling right now. And the Bengals, again, they're just not throwing the ball and they're playing slow. So it's not very enticing for fantasy. All right, let's keep moving on. We have Minnesota 34, Carolina 28. The Vikings, another overtime thriller. Dalvin Cook returned this game, had 29 carries, added 2 receptions, 140 yards, and a touchdown. He's good at football. When he's active, he's a top three running back. We know that. Kirk Cousins is playing really well this year. Another good game from him, 373 yards, three touchdowns. One goes to Thielen, who has a nice bounce back game here, 11 catches for 126 yards on 13 targets. And then the other two touchdowns go to Chris Herndon and KJ Osborne, had the game winner. Thielen and Jefferson combined for 27 targets in this game. Thielen, you can make the case Thielen's a sell high candidate because this has been an outlier yardage game for him. If you look at since Justin Jefferson broke out last year, Thielen's been under 50 yards in a ton of games. So if you want to sell high on Adam Thielen, I think now's the time. But you know, like, he's going to be among the most targeted players in the end zone, and that was the case. He scored a touchdown in the end zone where he, like, tripped and still caught the ball. It wasn't really impressive. So we know the Vikings offense concentrated. Tyler Conklin had a big 40-yard play on a broken play where nobody covered him. But he's, like, outside that you know, back-end tight end one tier. Like, if you have to start him in a pinch, it's not the worst option. But you don't feel great about it, especially with the Vikings going more three-wide sets since Irv Smith was out because KJ Osborne's playing a lot this year. So, I mean, the Vikings are pretty straightforward. Carolina, though, I mean, Sam Darnold was... He was bad in this game, but I will say the receivers didn't help him out. I mean, 17 of 41, 207 yards, one touchdown, one interception. What does he have? Seven touchdowns passing through six games. DJ Moore had a couple bad drops. He only caught five of his 13 targets. Robbie Anderson had a bunch of terrible drops. I mean, Robbie Anderson caught a touchdown in this game, and it was like his worst game of the year. He had 11 targets. He caught three of them for 11 yards. You look back at the last 3 weeks now, Robbie Anderson's gotten great volume. He's got 29 targets over the last 3 weeks. The problem is, during that span, he has 10 catches on those 29 targets, 87 yards, and his 0.75 yards per route run during that span is 89th among all qualified receivers. So he's just been terrible. And I was kind of holding out hope, especially in this spot. And I played him in DFS. I'm not just saying this. Like, I actually had faith in Robbie Anderson in the spot that he could break out. And again, he scored a touchdown, and it's like you're still super underwhelmed. So if you haven't dropped him now, again, even on a slate coming up where there's six teams on bye and some really, really good offenses, Robbie Anderson is very droppable. I did see Terrace Marshall suffered a concussion in this game. So, I mean, like, yeah, Anderson should still keep getting targets, but he's just not doing anything with them. We got the word on Friday that Christian McCaffrey placed on IR, so we're going to continue to see a lot of usage and volume from Chuba Hubbard, who saw an uptick in passing downs work last week, and then this week he has 16 carries for 61 yards and a score, only has one catch for 4 yards, so he's in that, like, RB15-16 range going forward. He's got some good matchups coming up. I'm trying to remember who Carolina plays this week, but, you know, especially if you have McCaffrey on your team, you're starting Chuba Hubbard, most likely. Has he looked amazing? He's looked fine, and that's all that matters. DJ Moore, again, 5 for 73 and a fumble, you'll take it, but he could have had a better game. Had a couple of drops in this game, had a drop in the end zone. This could have been 8 for 120 and a touchdown easily for DJ Moore. Who's been underwhelming in back-to-back games, but the volume's been there. It's not going anywhere. He's still awesome. You're starting DJ Moore as a top 12 receiver still. Every week, I am not moving off DJ Moore. Green Bay 24, Chicago 14. I mean, Rodgers, the yardage and volume wasn't great, but he scores touchdowns. Two touchdowns through the air, one on the ground. He's good at football. Aaron Jones, I mean, we continue to see A.J. Dillon get work. 11 carries for A.J. Dillon. He doesn't add anything in the passing game this week, which he had been doing in the past, but 11 carries for 59 yards. Aaron Jones has 13 carries for 73 yards and adds 4 for 34 and a receiving touchdown through the air. So, like, yeah, you're starting Aaron Jones as a top 7 or 8 running back without question. But now it's three straight weeks where A.J. Dillon has gotten not just, like, you know, 5-6 touches, and it's like, okay, he's giving Aaron Jones a breather. Right, he's getting flex-worthy work right now, and I think that's important because there's a lot of players that, you know, fantasy teams have had at the flex that have not been working out. But you look at A.J. Dillon now, over the past couple weeks, the last 3 weeks, AJ Dillon's averaging 13 touches per game. That's slightly more than what Jamal Williams is averaging during his time with the Packers, splitting work with Aaron Jones. So AJ Dillon, and again, I'm going to bring this up a lot, but it's six teams on a bye: the Chargers, the Bills, the Vikings, the Cowboys. It's a lot of really good players on bye. So I think AJ Dillon, I believe they're against Washington's awful defense. Yeah, AJ Dillon's a very viable flex this week and potentially going forward. And obviously, if Aaron Jones ever misses time, Dillon's going to be an absolute rock star in this offense. Davante Adams, bad game, 4 for 89. Those are Davante Adams' bad games. I mean, the Packers only threw 23 times. He still led the team with 5 targets. Nothing else to say about Davante Adams. He's awesome. He was also like an inch away from a touchdown. He made a play, got bumped, and stayed on his feet and couldn't stay in bounds. It would have been like a 40-yard touchdown. He's awesome. For the Bears, Khalil Herbert gets a start at running back with Damien Williams on the COVID list and David Montgomery out with the injury. Dominates the workload, 19 carries for 97 yards and a touchdown. Adds 2 receptions. So he dominated the snaps, dominated the touches. But Damien Williams very well could be back next week. So, again, it was a 50-50 split last week against the Raiders. So they're both probably flex plays until Dave Montgomery's back. The Bears still want to run the football. They're top 5 in rushing rate, well over 50% of the time. So there should be enough volume, especially in games where they're in control, which I think the Bears are a good enough overall team to where they'll look at their schedule. There will be some games where they're playing with a lead that both will be, you know, flex worthy. And Khalil Herbert looked really good in this game. So I don't think, especially after you already gave him work 2 weeks ago, that you say, okay, Damien Williams is back, Khalil Herbert, go back to the bench. Like, he's going to play. He's absolutely going to play. Justin Fields had his best fantasy game. 174 yards passing, 1 touchdown, 1 interception. That was not his fault. Should have been a free play. He thought it was a free play. The Packers defensive lineman went offsides, and Fields took a shot to the end zone. It was intercepted, and then apparently it wasn't offsides. But he did have 43 rushing yards, easily his most this season. It's a lot of scrambles, though, which is like, why are you not getting Justin Fields' designed runs? But trending upwards, Darnell Mooney, listen, I might tweet this out, and if you want to, you know, if you listen to the podcast, you want to tweet me your answer, go for it. But, like, is Darnell Mooney the wide receiver 1 in Chicago? Because he's seen more targets than Allen Robinson when Justin Fields has been under center. He saw 8 targets today and scored a touchdown. Robinson had 453 on 7 targets. You're not dropping on Robinson, but I don't see how you can play him right now. And it's weird because I don't think Allen Robinson's suddenly bad at football. He's been one of the 10 best receivers in football the last 5-6 years. But the volume's not there because the Bears are running so much. The offensive play calling has been up and down, and the quarterback play has been obviously up and down. So it's obviously very frustrating. But yeah, I mean, Darnell Mooney, if he was dropped a couple weeks ago and you picked him up, I was obviously excited about Mooney all offseason. And he even got an end zone target from a couple yards out in this game. So stock up for Darnell Mooney, who's, by the way, still a very good football player. So I'm excited for Darnell Mooney. This was supposed to be potentially the game of the week, and it just wasn't. Baltimore dominates the Chargers at home 34-6. Lamar Jackson, down fantasy game, has a touchdown to Mark Andrews. But under 170 passing yards, 2 interceptions, does have 51 rushing yards. But it was the Ravens rushing attack, which had been not part of their offense for most of the season. But that just kind of shows how easily it is to run on the Chargers. I mean, Devonta Freeman, 9 carries, 53 yards, and a touchdown. Latavius Murray, 9 carries, 44 yards, and a touchdown. And then Le'Veon Bell, 8 carries, 18 yards, and a touchdown. So the veteran running back hat trick is evident in Baltimore here. I mean, the Chargers' run defense is terrible. And the Ravens, they just created running lanes. I mean, Latavius Murray's touchdown from 14 yards out, he just kind of walked into the end zone. Same with Devonta Freeman, who just kind of got, it was like a sprint option with Lamar Jackson, who just pitched it to him before the defender collapsed, and he just kind of walked into the end zone. Like, the Chargers just didn't show up in this game. I do believe Latavius Murray suffered a minor potential injury in this game. And if that's the case, if Tyson Williams is a healthy scratch again like he was in this game, it's weird, but like Devonta Freeman could be a thing. He actually didn't look terrible in this game. Maybe that's more so to do with the Chargers' bad run defense, but that's something to keep an eye on. For the pass game, Rashad Bateman made his season debut on Sunday and thought he might be limited a little bit, and he kind of was, but with Sammy Watkins out, I mean, Rashad Bateman played about 64% of the snaps, tied with Mark Andrews for the team lead in targets with six, ran a route on nearly 70% of Baltimore's passing plays. That's pretty good usage. And yeah, Watkins could be back next week, but we know he's had issues with injuries in the past. I mean, Bateman needs to be added in every single league if he wasn't already. He should have been as an elite bench stash. And he's like a wide receiver four with upside going forward. Bateman is a tremendous prospect. He's a tremendous player. And Hollywood Brown, 5 targets, 4 for 35. I think he had another touchdown drop in this game. I mean, Hollywood Brown's been a top 12 fantasy receiver, and he's left so many points on the board. It'll be interesting to see what the usage for the receivers are going forward with Bateman playing a full-time role and potentially Watkins coming back. Not much to say about the Chargers. They just didn't show up in this game. Herbert's touchdown went to Jared Cook. Mike Williams had like a 26-yard catch down to the 2-yard line. He got hurt. He was already banged up entering this game. He didn't play much of the fourth quarter, so I don't think it's alarming. I mean, this game was out of reach. There was no point to bring him back into the game. And the Chargers are on bye this week, so they just kind of rested Williams down the stretch. Barely played the fourth quarter. So the bye week sets up nice for him. Get rest, get 100% healthy, and they go into the Patriots game in week 8. I think Keenan Allen's an interesting buy low. Again, like, has he been as great as we would have thought this year? No, but that's what happens when Mike Williams is balling out. But like, yeah, he had 5 for 50 in a game where the Chargers offense did nothing. So I wouldn't mind buying low on Keenan Allen, and I don't think anybody's freaking out about Austin Eckler. Still made up for his poor game with 4 for 48 on 7 targets for the passing game. So yeah, just a dud performance from the Chargers. I was expecting a much better game, obviously, and we just didn't get that. Again, another blowout here. 38-11, the Rams dominate the Giants. The Stafford-Cooper Kupp connection remains fully intact. They connect for 2 touchdowns. Kupp has 9 for 130 and 2 scores on a team-high 12 targets. He had 12 of the 30 targets in this game. Robert Woods, 2 for 31, but one of those receptions goes into the end zone. And then Daryl Henderson, man. He's just been... I don't want to say he was like a value because he crept up to the 4th or 5th round after Cam Akers' injury. But he's been just... incredible. He's not let you down once. He's literally not let you down once. When he's been active, he's been great. 21 carries, 78 yards and a touchdown. He adds 29 yards and 2 receptions for another touchdown. Again, it was a little bit worrisome after the Thursday night game where Sony Michel got more work and looked good on his snaps. And you say to yourself, okay, they're probably going to start mixing in Sony Michel more. And it just... no. I mean, in this game, Daryl Henderson, 54 snaps to Michelle's 12, 29 routes to Michelle's 2, and he out-touches Sony Michel in this game, 23-9, and I believe a lot of those 9 carries came with the Rams. This game was out of reach in the fourth quarter. Michel got a lot of work late. I mean, Daryl Henderson, there are situations where you say, okay, you can sell high on this guy, his value's at his high. Like, I wouldn't trade Daryl Henderson. And here's why. And here's what I said when we talked about trading for Daryl Henderson in the past on this podcast. Elite offense, check. Elite workload and elite playing time, everything like that, check. So he checks off both those boxes. Talented player, check. And the schedule, check. Again, he just played Seattle and the Giants. Now he's got Detroit, then Houston, then Tennessee, then San Francisco, then a bye. Then Green Bay, then Jacksonville, Arizona, Seattle, Minnesota, Baltimore. I mean, just don't trade him. Keep rolling with Daryl Henderson. He's been great. Why would you want to trade him with that schedule, with how good he's been, with how good this offense is? Keep rolling with Daryl Henderson. For the Giants, it was a mess. Devontae Booker got the start, didn't do much, but he'll take the 16 touches, and he'll get that type of workload each week until Saquon Barkley's back. The receivers just keep getting injured. Kenny Golladay didn't play in this game. Darius Slayton didn't play in this game. Shepard returned. And then Kadarius Toney, who was limited in practice with the ankle, active. And he was on pace to dominate in this game. 3 for 36 in the opening drive, I believe it was. And then he makes it like, what, 6 or 7 snaps through the game before aggravating the ankle and was quickly ruled out. Super, super frustrating. I mean, listen, I'm not taking a victory lap here, but I was higher on Kadarius Toney than a lot of other people in the industry. D-Bro, if you're listening, can you please admit that Kadarius Toney's a baller? I mean, his change of direction is elite. He is a threat to take the ball to the end zone every time he touches the ball. His route running's good. Like, he looks awesome. I hope his ankle injury isn't serious. I hope he can get back in the lineup because he's so fun to watch, and the Giants desperately need him. But in his absence, Sterling Shepard is going to see all the targets like he did in this game. 10 catches on 14 targets, 76 yards. The Giants are so banged up at receiver because I believe C.J. Board left this game too. So Slayton, Galladay, Toney, and C.J. Board all out. So Dante Pettis, remember him? 11 targets? Shepard's probably been dropped in a lot of leagues because he missed a couple weeks in a row. Make sure he's not out there because he's going to get at minimum 8 targets going forward, even if Tony's back, right? If it's just Toney and Shepard going forward, Evan Ingram's not a reliable player. They don't have Barkley. Daniel Jones has targeted Sterling Shepard a ton when Shepard and Jones play together, Shepard gets 8 plus targets. It just happens. So we'll keep an eye on this, obviously, in practice with Kadarius Toney. Not a great sign that he aggravated the ankle injury and was ruled out almost immediately, but I hope he gets back in the lineup because he is awesome, and I'm really excited to keep watching him going forward. All right, moving on to the last 1 o'clock game, Kansas City 31, Washington 13. This was another game that was frustrating to start. I mean, the Chiefs' offense with turnovers again, a bad Tyreek drop leads to an interception. Maybe Cole Hardman fumbles, and then Mahomes bobbles the snap and throws a terrible interception. But they get going in the second half. Tyreek Hill, a little bit worrisome, came into this game with the quad injury, was active, and then he had the bad drop, which led to the interception, and then it looked like he got benched. Like, I was watching the game. He was on the sideline with his helmet on. But I wonder if Andy Reid just kind of benched him because he had a drop last week, too, where it led to an interception. It was the Micah Hyde pick six. And then the second half starts, and Tyreek Hill is not in the field. Questionable return. Misses the opening drive. Fortunately, does return and has a good game. 9 for 76 and a touchdown on 12 targets. If you look at the routes and snaps and you see DeMarcus Robinson and Mecole Hardman ahead of Tyreek Hill, it's obviously misleading. Tyreek Hill's still the guy. And again, he had 12 targets. So as long as he's, you know, he might not practice much this week, but good to see him come back in the game. He should be good for week 7, which is a dream spot against Tennessee secondary. Travis Kelce also had an injury in this game. It was like either a wrist or a hand. Left, missed a couple plays, came back. He's had a couple injuries back to back, a little bit banged up, but he's returned in both games. 8 for 99 on 11 targets for Kelce. But the story here is obviously Darrell Williams. Darrell Williams gets a start in place of the injured Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And he gets the workload we want, right? He has all of the work over Jerick McKinnon, 24-4 in terms of touches, 57-25 in terms of snaps, and he ran 12 more pass routes than McKinnon. 21 carries, 2 touchdowns. They both came from inside the 5-yard line. I was looking back at numbers because with Clyde Edwards-Helaire, we've always worried about the goal line touches, which he hasn't gotten. Since week 8 of last season, Clyde Edwards-Helaire has 2. I believe 2 or 3. I actually have the numbers in front of me because I wrote about it. Like, learn how to read. So since week 8 of the 2020 season, CH has 3 total carries from inside the 5-yard line. Darrell Williams on Sunday had 2 such carries, including 3 inside the 10. So you feel better about Darrell Williams in fantasy than you would with Clyde Edwards-Helaire just because Williams isn't competing with anybody. Like, Clyde's, when right, is a more talented player than Darrell Williams. But we've seen now for weeks on weeks on weeks, they just don't trust him getting carries inside the 5. Why do you think they give Darrell Williams those carries? Why do you think they run, like, toss plays to Travis Kelce and offensive linemen and backup tight ends? So Darrell Williams now, with that usage, with how good this offense still is, despite some hiccups, a clear top 15 running back each week until Clyde Edwards-Helaire is back in the lineup. Just love that usage. Speaking of usage, you love the usage from Ricky Seals-Jones, who now, with Logan Thomas on IR, over the past 2 weeks, Ricky Seals-Jones has logged 141 of 142 snaps. During that span, he's run a pass route on 93 and 87% of Washington's dropbacks. He had a touchdown in this game. Again, like, a team that's bad. I mean, Washington's giving up the most points per drive in the NFL. They have trailed for the highest percentage of plays in the NFL. So they're going to be throwing. And outside of Terry McLaurin, you don't have a trustworthy number two pass catcher. Curtis Samuel's dealing with the groin. Dyami Brown's not been a thing. So Ricky Seals-Jones, until Logan Thomas is back, a top 12 tight end. You probably right now can't find a tight end. You can't find five tight ends with better usage and more conducive to fantasy production than Ricky Seals-Jones right now. Running routes on 90-plus percent of dropbacks. He literally played 100% of the snaps on Sunday. So, again, he should have been added last week, but if he somehow wasn't, go pick up Ricky Seals-Jones, and don't just put him on your bench. Unless you have one of those elite tight ends, start him, because this usage is great for RSJ. Antonio Gibson, he's been dealing with that shin, been limited in practice, been questionable the last couple weeks. He played in this game, aggravated the injury, and I think he hurt his calf as well. I think he was in and out of this game. J.D. McKissic ends up with a season-high 16 touches, 8 carries, 8 receptions. I mean, Gibson, he could miss time. Like, I believe he came back in this game, but, like, he's clearly not 100%. So McKissic is going to be a waiver wire target for me on the podcast on Tuesday with D-Bro. Again, I talked about not having a ton of reliable pass catchers outside of Terry McLaurin and Ricky Seals-Jones. J.D. McKissic, and yeah, a lot of it had to do with them chasing points and Gibson missing time. But 10 targets in this game. Washington is going to be chasing points because their schedule is tough and their defense is terrible. They have Green Bay next week, which they could be chasing points. So definitely give J.D. McKissic a look. All right, let's go to the 4 o'clock games. Arizona 37, Cleveland 14. Kyler Murray's not running as much, but he's making up for it by carving up defenses through the air. 229 yards, 4 touchdowns. 2 go to Hopkins, 1 goes to Kirk, 1 goes to AJ Green. I mean, again, you love the 2 touchdowns from DeAndre Hopkins, but he had 4 targets in this game. AJ Green had 6, Christian Kirk had 8, Rondell Moore also had 4, Chase Edmonds also had 4. And they're going to get Zach Ertz next week. So yeah, like, I talked about my concerns with Hopkins. I think you can sell, like, if you can trade DeAndre Hopkins for Justin Jefferson, I would do that. If you can trade DeAndre Hopkins for DJ Moore, I might do that. DeAndre Hopkins for Tyreek Hill, it's a no-brainer. DeAndre Hopkins for even Calvin Ridley. I know Ridley's been underwhelming. We haven't seen him play in 2 weeks because the Falcons had a bye and he didn't play in the London game. But, like, the touchdowns and yardage are going to come from Ridley because the Falcons are throwing the ball downfield more the last couple weeks. And Ridley, unlike Hopkins, his target share and everything like that is still really good. It's around 30%. He's getting a ton of targets. Hopkins, this time last year, Hopkins is getting 9 to 12 targets every single game, and now it's like 4 to 7. I mean, Kyler's spreading the ball around. Christian Kirk's been the downfield guy. AJ Green, despite everybody saying he's washed, has not only been pretty good this year, but very involved. Chase Edmonds and Rondell Moore getting more involved each week, especially Rondell Moore. And again, Zach Ertz is going to see, I think, more targets. I think Max Williams averaged just over 3 targets per game before his injury, but I think Ertz is going to get more targets per game because he's running shorter routes and his A-dot's not going to be as high and he's going to be getting open. So, yeah, I even after a 2-touchdown game, I still have some concerns about DeAndre Hopkins. James Conner out carries Chase Edmonds 16-4 in this game. Out touches him 17-7. I mean, maybe Edmonds isn't what we thought he would be. Maybe, like, we never thought he would be an every down back, and he never has this year, but, like, he's starting to trend downward. And again, a game the Cardinals face the Texans next week. That's tailor made for James Conner to get 18 carries and potentially 2 touchdowns. So Conner is a weekly flex, but I think he's a really strong flex next week. And yeah, Edmonds is still viable in PPR leagues, but, like, really, it's a really disappointing game from him, for sure. Injuries keep biting Cleveland. Baker Mayfield aggravates his shoulder injury again. He was pretty bad in this game. He had a fluke Hail Mary that saved his day if you started him. Donovan Peoples-Jones was the recipient of that Hail Mary, but he also scored. Like, Donovan Peoples-Jones in deeper leagues is a thing. He's been relatively involved the last couple weeks. Landry could be back soon, but I don't know if it's going to be this week because they play on Thursday night. And speaking of Thursday night, I mean, could they be without Kareem Hunt and Nick Chubb? Chubb didn't play in this game with a calf injury. Kareem Hunt started and was getting all the work. And then he suffers a non-contact calf injury, gets carted off the field. I mean, you have to consider him extremely questionable. Doesn't sound like Chubb's going to go on IR, but he's got to be viewed as questionable. So week 7 against the Broncos on Thursday night, we might see D'Ernest Johnson get the bulk of the carries for Cleveland with, you know, Demetri Felton being mixed in. So that's something we definitely need to keep an eye on. Odell Beckham also suffered a shoulder injury in this game, but returned 5 for 79 on 8 targets. He'll take it. I mean, Odell Beckham, if you watch Odell Beckham, he's still very, very good. He gets open at will. It's just, for whatever reason, Baker just doesn't hit him. And I'm starting to wonder, like, do I think the Browns are better without Odell Beckham and Baker's better without Odell Beckham? No, that's absolutely ludicrous. But for whatever reason, I do believe that Odell Beckham would just be better somewhere else. For whatever reason, like, they just, he gets open. I mean, it's frustrating. I still think Odell Beckham is a tremendous talent. And if you just watch the film, like I said, he's getting open. And wow, Schefter literally just tweeted this. Kareem Hunt is out at least 3 weeks with a calf injury that he suffered on Sunday. So Kareem Hunt will be out 3 weeks minimum. So if Nick Chubb can play, we often talk about how good and how much of a league winner Kareem Hunt could be if Nick Chubb missed time. But we often overlook how good Nick Chubb could be if Kareem Hunt missed time. Because Chubb's getting 20 carries and 80 plus rushing yards and a touchdown most weeks. What if he's getting 4 to 5 catches now? It is over. So if Nick Chubb is active on Thursday and we start to see more passing game work, he could absolutely be the number one running back for as long as Kareem Hunt's out. It's entirely possible. So again, Kareem Hunt out for the next 3 weeks at least for the Cleveland Browns. Vegas 34, Denver 24. Josh Jacobs 16 carries, but they mix in Kenyon Drake more than they have this year. 4 carries and a touchdown for Drake, and he adds 2 catches for 39 yards, another touchdown. I still wouldn't go adding Kenyon Drake or starting him, but he got involved. Henry Ruggs had another long touchdown this game. I mean, there's really nothing I have to take away from the Raiders. Derek Carr played pretty well in this game. Another underwhelming game from Darren Waller, but again, like 5 for 59, it's not what you want to see from Darren Waller, who was a top 3 draft pick in fantasy, but like, what are you going to do? I mean, it's tight end. You're not sitting Darren Waller ever, you know? So, there's really, like, I understand you can be frustrated with Darren Waller as of late, excuse me, but like, there's really nothing to talk. There's no talking point because you're not benching him. And are you really trading? Like, who are you trading Darren Waller for? The only thing I could say is, like, maybe you're really confident in a tight end you picked up and you say, okay, I can trade Waller to this person who is hurting at tight end and I can get a running back. Like, that's the only talking point. But you're not benching Darren Waller. For Denver, they got behind in this game, so Teddy Bridgewater throws the ball 49 times. Another nice game from Courtland Sutton, who had 14 targets, 8 for 94 and a touchdown. Touchdown came late. It was a really nice effort. I mean, Judy's designated for return. If you're going to sell high on Sutton and Noah Fant, who had 9 for 97 and a score on 11 targets, now's the time. Even Tim Patrick. Like, I like Patrick a lot, but if Judy's back, everybody's going to take a hit. And then the backfield continues to be a split. Javonte, 11 for 53. Melvin Gordon, 10 for 50. As much as I would still, especially after this game, I would still try to trade for Javonte Williams, especially if somebody's just impatient with him not getting the work that we want. The schedule's still really awesome. Melvin Gordon's been missing practice time for like 4 weeks now with some minor injuries. I still think buying low on Javonte Williams makes a ton of sense given the talent. He's ripping off a 30-plus yard run and an impressive run every single game. And if he starts to finally get more work, or if Gordon misses time, you're not going to be able to get Javonte Williams because he's going to be great given the schedule, given how good he is. So I still think trading for Javonte Williams makes a ton of sense. All right, last game, Dallas, this was a thriller, 35-29 in overtime over the Patriots. CeeDee Lamb and Amari Cooper were doing nothing for the majority of this game. Lamb had a touchdown from like 2 yards out on a fade and then ripped off a ton of huge plays in the fourth quarter and overtime, including the game winner. Ultimately finishes with 9 for 149 yards and 2 touchdowns on a team high 11 targets. Look, these are the games we kind of prefer for fantasy when Dak has to throw 51 times. Because when Dak throws, obviously not 51 times is going to be repeatable, but when he throws 40 times, CeeDee Lamb's going to be really good. So Dallas on a bye next week. They said he injured his calf on that game-winning touchdown pass. Dak downplayed it, said if the game continued, he would have been able to play. The bye week's going to be, like, Dak's probably not going to miss time. Amari Cooper, he's been really underwhelming lately. 5-for-55 on 8 targets in this game. I mean, Gallup, they're saying, is still a few weeks away. It's tough with Cooper because it's hard to find players on your bench that you feel better about starting. But what happens if Dak and the Cowboys go back to throwing the ball 27 times next week or in week 8? Right? It's frustrating. Zeke, 17 carries, 69 yards, doesn't score in this game, but he makes up for it. I mean, the Patriots play a ton of man coverage. So when you're playing man coverage and you have the corners on the outside against Lamb and Cooper, it means you have linebackers on Tony Pollard and CeeDee Lamb, or on Tony Pollard and Ezekiel Elliott, rather, and Zeke has 7 catches for 50 yards. How about 9 targets for Ezekiel Elliott? So, again, 24 touches on a game he doesn't score. He still does very well for you. Tony Pollard still in that flex range with 13 touches as well. For New England, we had it. Jacoby Myers scored a touchdown this game, and as soon as you saw the yellow marker on the field, Nobody expected that to be on the defense. So Jacoby Myers still has yet to find the end zone. Does get a 2-point conversion. 5-for-44. He's still a really solid wide receiver 3. And again, with this usage, with this volume, he's going to find the end zone eventually. It should have happened this week. For the backfield, Damian Harris was questionable entering this game. He was active, and the Patriots really ran it down Dallas's throat for a lot of this game. Harris had 18 carries for 101 yards and a score. He got them down to the 5 on another possession and then checked out with, he limped off the field. Ramondre Stevenson came in and scored the short yardage touchdown. It was nice to see Stevenson involved in the passing game in this game. 3 catches for 39 yards on 3 targets. But still not somebody I would pick up, but somebody I'm not starting anytime soon. It's still Damon Harris's backfield. Hunter Henry has now scored in 3 straight games, and the Patriots are paying Jonnu Smith and Nelson Aguilar a ton of money to do nothing. I mean, Jonnu Smith is just not even running routes. He is, it's just brutal. And I don't get it, because obviously you paid him that money, but Jonnu Smith's an incredible player. Get him screens, get him a couple carries, let him make plays after contact where he's been elite. So it's super frustrating, but I mean, they're running the ball and they're throwing to Jacoby Myers and the running backs and Hunter Henry, really. So it's frustrating. We got one more game in week number 7. It's Monday Night Football between the Buffalo Bills and the Tennessee Titans. So if you need a lot of fantasy points from some really good players, this might be a good night for you. There's a lot of good players playing in this game, so it'll be interesting to see what happens in that game. D-Bro and I will be back on Tuesday with a special guest on the waiver wire edition of Fade the Chalk podcast. We'll show that guest when the time comes. Won't give it away here, but all three of us will be breaking down the top waiver wire ads ahead of an important week 7. Again, Chargers, Cowboys, Bills, Vikings, Jacksonville, all on bye. A lot of very, very good fantasy players that will not be available this week. So you really need to make sure you're, you know, rounding out your roster and getting some viable pieces to put in your starting lineup this week with a ton of great players on bye. Thanks everybody for listening. Hope week 6 was great for you as we move forward on to week number 7. Adam Pfeiffer here. Again, Deber and I on Tuesday talking waiver wire ads ahead of week 7. Best of luck on Monday Night Football. We'll be back on Tuesday. For Adam Pfeiffer, this is Fade the Chalk. Have a good one. We'll talk to you guys on Tuesday.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Fade the Chalk with Derek and Adam. Make sure to follow your hosts and the podcast on Twitter at @DBRO_FFB, at @APPfeiffer24, and at @ChalkFade. Smash that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.